بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد، اللهم معلم إبراهيم علمنا، ومفهم سليمان فهمنا، اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا، وانفعنا بما علمتنا، وزدنا علما، إنك أنت السميع العليم. إن شاء الله، like yesterday, we'll read the matn in Arabic, the portion that we're going to be taking today, as an encouragement, inshallah, to the ikhwah to memorize. And I advise all those that attend to memorize the book in Arabic, inshallah. يقول المؤلف رحمه الله تعالى in Arabic, if there's any mistakes, just correct me. اعلم أرشدك الله اعلم رحمك الله أنه يجب على كل مسلم ومسلمة تعلم ثلاث مسائل والعمل بهن. الأولى أن الله خلقنا ورزقنا ولم يتركنا هملا، بل أرسل إلينا رسولا، فمن أطاعه دخل الجنة ومن عصاه دخل النار. والدليل قوله تعالى بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: إنا أرسلنا إليكم رسولا شاهدا عليكم كما أرسلنا إلى فرعون رسولا، فعصى فرعون الرسول فأخذناه أخذا وبيلا. الثانية أن الله لا يرضى أن يشرك معه أحد في عبادته، لا ملك مقرب ولا نبي مرسل. والدليل قوله تعالى: وأن المساجد لله فلا تدعوا مع الله أحدا. الثالثة أن من أطاع الرسول ووحد الله لا يجوز له موالاة من حاد الله ورسوله ولو كان أقرب قريب. والدليل قوله تعالى: لا تجد قوما يؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر يوادون من حاد الله ورسوله ولو كانوا آباءهم أو أبناءهم أو إخوانهم أو عشيرتهم، أولئك كتب في قلوبهم الإيمان وأيدهم بروح منه، ويدخلهم جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار خالدين فيها، رضي الله عنهم ورضوا عنه، أولئك حزب الله، ألا إن حزب الله هم المفلحون. اعلم أرشدك الله لطاعته أن الحنيفية ملة إبراهيم، أن تعبد الله وحده مخلصا له الدين. وبذلك أمر الله جميع الناس وخلقهم لها، كما قال تعالى: وما خلقت الجن والإنس إلا ليعبدون. ومعنى يعبدون يوحدون. وأعظم ما أمر الله به التوحيد، وهو إفراد الله بالعبادة. وأعظم ما نهى عنه الشرك، وهو دعوة غيره معه. والدليل قوله تعالى: واعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا به شيئا. And that's today's portion, inshallah ta'ala. So the author, he starts by saying, I'lam rahimak Allah. Know, like we said yesterday, know, may Allah have mercy upon you, that it is obligatory upon every Muslim and Muslimah. That is obligatory and is not recommended. It's something that is wajib upon every Muslim and Muslimah. And this right here shows that men and women, when it comes to those things that are obligatory upon them, and the takalif that Allah Azza wa Jal has set, that they are equal in that regard. So right here, generally speaking, when Allah Azza wa Jal commands with something, then it encompasses the men and the women. So an example of that, from the things that are wajib upon us in the legislation, the sharia, is the salah. وَأَقِيمُ الصَّلَاةِ and establish the prayer. This encompasses the men and the women. But there are some ahkam, there are some rulings that are specific to men. The example of the prayer likewise, it is obligatory upon the men to pray in the masajid, to pray in the mosques. As for the women, then they don't have to. An example of something that is from the ahkam specific to the women without the men is that the women, sometimes in the month, they are excused from prayer due to menses and the like. They are excused from praying. And Allah Azza wa Jal does not hold them account to that. As for the men, then they are never excused from the prayer. So these are the three types of ahkam. The asl and the origin is all ahkam are for men and women, unless there is the evidence to show that it's specific to women or specific to men. Specific to women or specific to men. واضح؟ واضح؟ طيب. As for knowledge, this is the topic at hand right now. Knowledge is obligatory upon both men and women. Knowledge of what we are studying right now, Tawheed and Ash-Shirk. And these three affairs that we're about to learn is wajib for all men and women, rich and poor, to learn these affairs and to act upon them, as the Mu'allif says, and to act upon them. So the first is, there's three things he's going to talk about. The first thing, between brackets, write down between brackets, the obligation of obeying the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The obligation of obeying the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. This is the first matter that he's going to talk about. The obligation of obeying the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, or the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So he says, the Mu'allif rahimahullah, اعلم رحمك الله أنه يجب على كل مسلم ومسلمة تعلم ثلاث هذه المسائل والعمل بهن. الأولى, firstly, أن الله خلقنا ورزقنا ولم يتركنا هملا. That Allah Azza wa Jal, He created us and provided sustenance for us. And He did not leave us هملا. And Allah Azza wa Jal, He did not leave us neglected. بَلْ أَرْسَلَ إِلَيْنَا رَسُولًا. Rather, He sent a messenger to us. So whoever obeys Him will enter the paradise, and whosoever disobeys Him will enter the hellfire. So this first point right here, the Shaykh, he first mentions that Allah Azza wa Jal خَلَقَنَا, أي أَنَّ اللَّهَ خَلَقَنَا مِنَ الْعَدَمِ. That Allah Azza wa Jal, He created us from nothing. Just like Allah Azza wa Jal, He says in Surah Insan, هَلْ أَتَى عَلَى الْإِنسَانِ حِينٌ مِنَ الدَّهْرِ لَمْ يَكُنْ شَيْئًا مَذْكُورًا. Has there not come upon a man? Has there not come upon a man a period of time when he was not a thing even mentioned? Yani he was not even created and no one used to mention him. 100 years ago from today, none of us were something to be mentioned. None of us were something to be at all. And here when Allah Azza wa Jal, He says, has there not come upon a man? Insan, then this is shamil, like we said, to men and women. When the Sharia says a rajul, or a man, or a person, then it is included in that khitab, in that address, men and women. Unless an evidence specifically mentions women out of that hukum. Clear? Clear? What did I say? Allah Azza wa Jal here, He says in the ayah, هَلْ أَتَى عَلَى الْإِنسَانِ حِينٌ مِنَ الدَّهْرِ لَمْ يَكُنْ شَيْئًا مَذْكُورًا. Has there not come upon a man? Is this specific to a man right now without women? All of them. When Allah Azza wa Jal says in the Quran, or in the Sharia, when it comes in the Nusus al-Sharia, men, or a person, or him, or kada, and He doesn't say her, or she, or upon a man and a woman, because the Sharia doesn't say that a lot. Majority of the time, and the origin is that encompasses the men and the women. Allah doesn't have to say a man and a woman and repeat women all the time. When He says man, including that is the women. Do you understand? Has there not come upon a man a period of time? Meaning, there was a time where men and women were not something to be mentioned, were not created. It's not specific to men only. Then Allah Azza wa Jal, He says, the Mu'allif, He says, الْأُولَى أَنَّ اللَّهَ خَلَقَنَا وَرَزَقَنَا. The second thing is that Allah Azza wa Jal, He provided for us. He provided sustenance for us. He provided provisions for us from food, from drink, from clothes, a home, transport, and other benefits. All of these things, Allah Azza wa Jal, He created them. And there's two benefits from this, that Allah Azza wa Jal provides these things for us. Number one, write down. Number one, the first benefit is that so that we may survive and remain alive with these things, food, drink, shelter, and the likes. The first benefit is that we use them so that we may survive and remain alive. So that we may survive and remain alive. And secondly, that we use these things that Allah Azza wa Jalla has provided us and seek help with these things in order to fulfill the worship of Allah Azza wa Jal, the reason why we created for. So Allah Azza wa Jal, He gave us food and drink, and a place to stay, we use these things in order to gain quwwah, to gain strength, to worship Allah Azza wa Jalla. And that is why if a person, he intends whilst he is eating or drinking or going to sleep, he intends by way of these things that he does it so that he may gain strength to worship Allah Azza wa Jalla, he gets reward for every second that he sleeps and for the food that he's eating and for the drink that he's drinking. He turns it from an adah, from something that is normal and permissible, to ibadah through his intention. So when you're eating and you're hungry, and you eat with the intention of eating so that you may gain strength to read the Quran, or to pray, or to establish the worship of Allah, or that you sleep so that you may gain energy to wake up for Salat al-Fajr, so you sleep early, and the like, you have the intention for that, you get reward for it. So Allah Azza wa Jalla, He created us, and there's two benefits we can get from that. The first is that we survive and remain alive, and the second is that we can use it to help us in fulfilling the purpose that we were created for, which is the worship of Allah Azza wa Jalla. Tayyib. The Mu'allif, he says, look at the way the Shaykh authored the book. The Shaykh said, Allah Azza wa Jalla, He created us from nothing. Then Allah Azza wa Jalla, He provided sustenance for us. And we said, from the benefits is that so we can use it to worship Allah. Then thirdly, he says, He did not leave us neglected, meaning we never had any purpose. Allah created us for a mighty purpose. He never created us just for mere jest and play. And that purpose is, like we've mentioned in the other book and mentioned right now, is that to establish the worship of Allah Azza wa Jalla. Allah Azza wa Jalla, He says, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. And I did not create them, the jinn and the mankind, except to worship me. So when Allah Azza wa Jalla explained to us our purpose, He likewise did not leave us neglected in how to worship Him. We mentioned yesterday that those people that act without knowledge have a resemblance to the Christians, and they worship Allah Azza wa Jalla upon ignorance. But Allah Azza wa Jalla did not neglect this ummah, this nation. Bal, what did he do? This is what the author mentions. Bal arsala ilayna rasula. But, or indeed, Allah Azza wa Jal, He sent down to us a messenger. Why? A messenger so that He can teach us how to worship Allah Azza wa Jal. So Allah created us, sustained us, and He did not leave us neglected. We know our purpose, but He did not neglect us to worship Allah Azza wa Jal like we wish. So this person worships Allah Azza wa Jal how he wants, and this worship worships Allah in a different way, the way that he likes. Everyone ala what he imagines. La. Allah sent down to us a messenger in our form, being a human being. Someone that we can relate to, someone that we can take an example in. So He teaches us how to worship Allah Azza wa Jal, and He teaches us tawheed and those things to carry out, and to warn us from shirk and those things that are prohibited. So if a person obeys the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he enters Jannah. And whosoever disobeys the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, then he enters the hellfire. Simple. Allah created us, then He sent us a messenger to teach us how to worship Him. Allah created us to worship Him, and He sent a messenger to teach us how to worship Him. And then, like we mentioned, the Shaykh here, he cultivates and nurtures the student upon evidences. So here he just mentions something, and he mentions the evidence straight after. And his evidence is, in Arabic, إِنَّا أَرْسَلْنَا إِلَيْكُمْ رَسُولًا شَاهِدًا عَلَيْكُمْ كَمَا أَرْسَلْنَا إِلَى فِرْعَوْنَ رَسُولًا فَعَصَى فِرْعَوْنُ الرَّسُولَ فَأَخَذْنَاهُ أَخْذًا وَبِيلًا. In English, indeed we have sent to you, to our nation, a messenger, as a witness upon you, just as we sent Pharaoh, Fir'aun, a messenger. But Fir'aun disobeyed the messenger, so we seized him with a severe punishment. Allah Azza wa Jal sent us a messenger. Whoever disobeys him, he gets punishment. Like Allah Azza wa Jal sent Fir'aun a messenger. And that messenger is who? Allah Azza wa Jal was sent Fir'aun a messenger, and that's Musa. And he disobeyed Musa, so he was seized with a severe punishment. This shows that the severity of disobeying the messenger is number one. And how Fir'aun, alayhi min Allahi ma yastahiq, that when he disobeyed his messenger, that he received severe punishment. Likewise, our nation, if they were to disobey the messenger that was sent to us, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, then they are in they are threatened with a severe punishment likewise. And the way to be saved from that punishment is to worship Allah. How? Prophet ﷺ, how he taught us. So here in the ayah, the istidlal is, number one, if you disobey the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, you go to the hellfire. That's what the author mentioned. Whoever disobeys him goes to the hellfire. And the opposite of it is true. The way to be saved from that hellfire and that punishment and that severe punishment is to follow and to listen and to obey the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And that's the first point that we mentioned between the two brackets. The obligation of obeying the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Then the author, he goes on to the second point. الثانيه ان الله لا يرضى ان يشرك معه احد في عبادته لا ملك مقرب ولا نبي مرسل. So this is the second point, right between two brackets, that Allah Azza wa Jal is not pleased with shirk, whatever kind it is. Allah Azza wa Jal, he's not pleased with shirk, whatever kind it is. So the Mu'allif, he says, as is in front of you in the book, the Mu'allif rahimahullah, he says, Allah is not pleased with anyone being mixed into worship with him. Neither an angel brought close, nor a prophet that was sent. And that is because ibadah and tawheed and worship is the sole right of Allah Azza wa Jal. Just as we learn in the hadith of Mu'adh ibn Jabal, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam asked Mu'adh ibn Jabal, when he asked him, what is the right of Allah Azza wa Jal upon his slaves? And he said, Allah wa Rasuluhu A'lam. He said, أَنْ يَعْبُدُوهُ وَلَا يُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا. That they worship him and do not associate any partners with him. That they worship him alone and do not associate any partners with him. So this sole right of Allah Azza wa Jal, if you give it to someone else, then this is a bull, it's oppression. And this is the biggest crime. And we will learn more about that later. But right here, the Shaykh, he gives an example that makes it crystal clear for the reader. He says, Allah Azza wa Jal is not pleased with shirk. He's not pleased with being shared in his worship. Not with a close angel, nor a prophet that was sent. A close angel, the example of is, the best of the angels is, Jibreel alayhi salam. And the best of the prophets that were sent is, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So if Allah Azza wa Jal is not pleased in being mixed with his worship and shared in his worship with a close angel, the likes of Jibreel, who's the closest of the angels and the best of the angels, and the best, and likewise not being happy and pleased with being worshipped alongside the best of the prophets, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, then what do you think of the case of someone who's below the best of the angels and below the best of the prophets? He is more deserving of not being worshipped alongside Allah. Fahimt? That is the intent of the Mu'allif here. That if the Prophet ﷺ, who is the best of prophets and messengers that was sent, is not allowed and Allah Azza wa Jalla is not pleased with him being worshipped alongside Allah, nor angel, the best of angels, Jibreel alayhi salam, being worshipped alongside Allah, then no other creation other than those two that are least than them, that are lower than them, that are below all of them, are deserving of being worshipped alongside Allah. And then the Mu'allif, rahimahullah, he mentions his evidence, like is his norm. He says, وَأَنَّ الْمَسَاجِدَ لِلَّهِ فَلَا تَدْعُوا مَعَ اللَّهِ أَحَدًا. And verily the masajid belong to Allah. So do not call unto anyone along with Allah. Verily the masajid belong to Allah. So do not call unto anyone along with Allah. And the prohibition of calling upon other than Allah itself is an evidence that all of worship is for him alone. And in the Arabic language, the word dua, many times it can be used to refer to all of ibadah. A dua in Arabic language can be used to mean all of ibadah. And Sheikh Saleh al-Sheikh and likewise Sheikh Saleh al-Usaymi alluded to this, and they mentioned, so the meaning of the verse here, فَلَا تَدْعُوا مَعَ اللَّهِ أَحَدًا, do not call anyone alongside Allah Azza wa Jal, means فَلَا تَعْبُدُوا مَعَ اللَّهِ أَحَدًا. Do not worship anyone alongside Allah. Understand? Do not worship anyone alongside Allah. It's clear? So the word dua is a specific type of ibadah, worship. But here, the intent is, do not worship any type of worship alongside Allah. Fahimt? It's clear? And then we go to the third point of the mu'allif. So there's three matters. The first matter that we learn is, between brackets, obeying the obligation of obeying the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The second, between brackets, that Allah Azza wa Jalla is not pleased with shirk, whatever kind it is. And third, the third point here is allegiance and disallegiance. Allegiance and disallegiance, between brackets. Or allegiance and disassociation, whatever you like. So the Mu'allif rahimahullah ta'ala, he says, من أطاع الرسول ووحد الله لا يجوز له موالاة من حاد الله ورسوله ولو كان أقرب قريب. So thirdly, the third matter is, whoever obeys the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that's the first matter that we took, and singles Allah Azza wa Jal out in worship, this is the second matter that Sheikh mentioned. If he fulfills these two matters, then it is not permissible for him to take as allies those who oppose Allah Azza wa Jal and his Messenger, not even if they are close relatives. So this third point here, the affair of wala and bara, allegiance and disallegiance, is from the huquq of tawheed and is tabi' al-tawheed. It is from the rights of tawheed and is a follow-on from tawheed. So if a person fulfills the first point, which is obeying the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and secondly singles Allah Azza wa Jal out in worship, then it is not befitting for him, it is not allowed for him to take those that disbelieve in Allah and his Messenger as allies, as awliya, even if they are close relatives. So the Muslim has allegiance and loyalty to the believers, to the Muslimun. He loves them, he aids them, and he loves Iman and its people, and Tawheed and its people. And at the same time, he disassociates and frees himself from shirk and its people. From shirk and its people. So like we mentioned, this is what the first two matters necessitate. That if a person obeys the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam and singles Allah Azza wa Jal, it necessitates that he does not take those that oppose Allah and his Messenger as allies and friends, the people that he loves and aids. And that is why a non-Muslim, a disbeliever in Allah Azza wa Jal, does not inherit from a Muslim. So if a father dies and he's Muslim, and his son is a non-Muslim, disbeliever in Allah Azza wa Jal and his Messenger, he does not inherit any money from him. That's number one. Number two, another example is that a non-Muslim can never become a guardian of a woman when she wants to get married. He cannot be her wali. And there's other examples, the likes of it. طيب. And then the author mentions as evidence the long ayah that we read, لا تجد قوم يؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر يوادون من حاد الله ورسوله إلى آخر الآيات إلى آخر الآية. The translation being, as you guys have, you will not find a people who believe in Allah Azza wa Jal and the last day having affection for those who oppose Allah and his Messenger, even if they were their fathers or their sons or their brothers or their kindred. Those he has decreed within their hearts faith and supported them with spirit, ruh min, from him. And we will admit them to gardens beneath which rivers flow, wherein they abide eternally. Allah is pleased with them and they are pleased with him. Those are the party of Allah. Unquestionably, the party of Allah, they are the successful. So affection, it is not Muslim for it's not permissible for a Muslim to love a disbeliever, even if he's a family member. And that is why Allah Azza wa Jal, he said about Ibrahim alayhi salam, وَمَا كَانَ اسْتِغْفَارُ إِبْرَاهِيمَ لِأَبِيهِ إِلَّا عَنْ مَوْعِدَةٍ وَعَدَهَا إِيَّاهِ فَلَمَّا تَبَيَّنَ لَهُ أَنَّهُ عَدُوٌّ لِلَّهِ تَبَرَّأَ مِنْهِ إِنَّ إِبْرَاهِيمَ لَأَوَّاهٌ حَلِيمٌ. English translation being, and the request of forgiveness from Ibrahim for his father, and his father was not a non-Muslim. The father of Ibrahim was non-Muslim. In fact, the father of Ibrahim was from those that used to make the idols that they used to worship. He used to make the idols that his people used to worship. So the request of forgiveness from Ibrahim for his father was only because of a promise he had made to him. But when it became apparent to Ibrahim that his father was an enemy to Allah, he disassociated himself from him. تَبَرَّأَ مِنْ Indeed, Ibrahim was compassionate and patient. So this affair of freeing oneself from the disbelievers in Allah and His Messenger and not having allegiance with them, this here, listen very carefully. It does not necessitate that we boycott them and don't have worldly relations with them. It doesn't necessitate that. You can dislike them in your religion. It does not necessitate that you boycott them and not don't have any worldly relations with them. And then there are a couple of exceptions to the qaida of al-bara and disassociation. And we'll mention seven. So from those exceptions is number one, that with our dislike, that alongside our dislike for them and dissociation, we love to call them to Allah Azza wa Jal. We love khair for them, good for them, so that they become guided, so that they enter Islam and are saved from a severe punishment. That's number one. That with and alongside our dislike and dissociation of them, we love to call them to Allah Azza wa Jal and want good for them so that they enter Islam and are saved from severe punishment. So we take up any opportunity that arises to call them to Islam. And that's from us wanting good for them. It's number one, okay? That with our, alongside our dislike for them and disassociating ourselves from them, we love to call them to Allah Azza wa Jal so that they become guided and are saved from severe punishment. So we take up every opportunity when it arises to call them to Islam. Secondly, there is no problem with being generous and kind towards them if they are not in a state of war against you. As long as there is not a war happening, then and they're not waging a war against you, then there's no problem being kind and generous and helping them out. There's no problem with that. Just like Allah Azza wa Jal, He says in Surah Mumtahina, verse number 8, and we mention our dalil. So we've mentioned the point here that it's okay to be generous. You have the right to ask, what's your evidence? Zakallah khair. Verse number 8. And in English, Allah does not forbid you with respect to those who do not fight you because of religion and who do not expel you from your homes from being kind towards them and behaving justly with them. Indeed, Allah loves those who act justly. You can write Surah Mumtahina verse 8 and go back to afterwards. This here proves that as long as they're not in a state of war against you, that Allah Azza wa Jalla does not forbid you from being kind to them. Okay? Number three. It is obligatory upon the Muslim son or the Muslim daughter of a kafir parent, of a disbelieving parent, to be dutiful to their parents. It is obligatory, wajib, upon a Muslim son or a Muslim daughter to be dutiful and kind and generous to their non-Muslim parents. And this is from the Mahasin al-Islam. These are from the good characteristics of a Muslim and Islam. That even though his parents are non-disbelievers, he's still dutiful and good to them. The only thing is that he has to pay in mind is he does not obey them in kufr. He does not obey them if they tell him to fall into kufr. And with any parent, even if your parents are Muslim, you're not allowed to obey them in those things that are sinful. So if even a Muslim parent or a non-Muslim parent was to tell you, go buy me pork or go buy me alcohol, even if he's Muslim, you're not allowed to obey him in that. You obey him in ma'roof, in those things that are good. Point number four. It is permissible for a Muslim to go into trade and business and have exchanges with a non-Muslim. It is permissible for a Muslim to do business and trade and have exchanges with a non-Muslim, just like the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to do. He used to have trades and businesses and dealings with the Yahud of Medina, the Jews of Medina. There was Jews living in Medina at the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he used to have dealings with them. He used to the point that one time he made a trade with a Jew, Rahan, so that he could buy food for his family. He made a specific trade with a Jew so he could buy food for his family. So this is something that's allowed, and there's no problem with it. Number five, so that's number four. Is it permissible for a Muslim to do business, trade, and have exchange with a non-Muslim? And there's no problem with this, just like the Prophet ﷺ used to do with the Jews of Medina. There's no problem, number five, there's no problem in accepting an invitation from them, from a non-Muslim, and to eat with them, as long as it's halal, as long as it's permissible. Just like the Prophet ﷺ used to do. Prophet ﷺ used to do so likewise. But bear in mind, it says as long as it's halal. So you're not allowed to go to a bar and they're drinking alcohol and you say, I'm going to have Pepsi. La 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 la. It's not halal for you to sit in the table, aslam. Prophet ﷺ prohibited from sitting on a table where alcohol is served. So as long as the food and the invitation that you're going to is halal, you're allowed to go. But you have to be aware the condition. It says as long as it's halal. Not like we mentioned, a lot of people, they will go to a pub with their colleagues at work, and they will say, I'm not having their food, I'm just having Pepsi or water, or I'm having my sandwich, and they're having pork and alcohol on the same table. It's not allowed. Okay? So number five again, there's no problem in accepting an invitation from them and to eat with them as long as it's halal, just like the Prophet ﷺ used to do. Number six, to be good and well-mannered to your non-Muslim neighbor, because the neighbor has a right upon you, even if he's a disbeliever. Even if he's a disbeliever, they have a right as a neighbor. And the Muslims in Medina used to be neighbors with the Jews and other than the Jews. So they have a right and you treat them well. Number seven, and lastly, it is not allowed to oppress them in any shape, way, in any shape, form, or way. It is not allowed to oppress them in any shape, form, or way. So these seven things, in conclusion, is a refutation against the Khawarij and those that have the same methodology, that believe that just because a person is a non-Muslim, that we can oppress them, that you can take their money, that you can kill them. It's not allowed. Jihad, like we mentioned in Qawaid Arba, jihad has its rulings, has its conditions, has its wajibat. You have to have a ruler, Muslim ruler. If you have parents, you have to ask your parents for permission. You're not allowed to kill civilians, you're not allowed to kill women, children, elderly men. There is rules to warfare. Now we're talking about someone that lives in a city, right? You're living now in UK. The Khawarij, they use these ayat and these ahadith to their advantage and say, look, this person is a kafir and Allah Azza wa Jalla says, kill them wherever you find them. That's in a warfare. Now you're in a city and the Muslims have a peace treaty with this country. You're not allowed to kill their people. You're not allowed to oppress them. You're not allowed to, all the things that we mentioned. Okay? So that's one extreme. That's clear, right? That's one extreme. And then we have another extreme. The other extreme is total negligence. So they don't have any dissociation, and they have allegiance towards them, and they love them, and they aid them in their religion. So they will water down the religion of Islam in order to please them. They will compromise some of the key pillars of their whole religion in order to please them. This is the opposite extreme, right? Opposite extreme. And Islam is wasat, in the middle between two extremes. In between two extremes. So we dislike them and disassociate from them in our religion, in the religious affairs. And at the same time, we're kind to them. We're good to the neighbors. We help them out if they need help. We call them to Islam. We do business with them. It's no problem. They invite us. We accept the invitation. There's no problem. Okay? We don't kill them for no reason. Likewise, the other side, the negligent side, we don't join their festivals. For example, it's Christmas season. These people are celebrating the birth of Jesus, alayhi salam, which is false. And a Muslim goes and takes part in that festival. This is negligence. Where's your disassociation? Where's your allegiance to Islam and its people? Where's your freeing yourself from shirk and its people? They're involved in shirk right now. They're in a festival of shirk. Likewise, the other festivals that they have. So this is two extremes, and Islam is in the wasat, in the middle between two extremes. And this is a very important affair that you understand, and you don't fall into any of the two extremes. Because here, you go harsh and extreme, and extreme will never stay for long. You will either end up killing someone, some blood that's not halal for you, and that's someone's right, and they will take their right from you in Yawm al-Qiyamah, or you end up being killed, or you end up stop practicing, because a shidda, a ghilza, being too extreme, will not last all the time. You end up stop practicing, and you will see it happens so many times. The people that are upon that manhaj, they ended up stop practicing, they fall off completely. Nor the negligence, where they could fall into shirkiyat or kufr, just so they could please the people that they are living with or the non-believers. So the three matters, the first, a quick recap, the first is the obligation of obeying the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The second is singling out Allah azza wa jal in Tawheed, and Allah azza wa jal not being pleased with being shared in his worship. And thirdly, which is the haqq, the huquq of Tawheed, from the huquq of Tawheed, that al-wala wal-bara, to have allegiance and disallegiance, to dislike and have free yourself from shirk and its people, from its people. I hope that's clear. Crystal clear, huh? Clear, huh? Fast and good. Then we go on to, and by the way, this is the second treatise that we've done. We said an introduction has three treatises. This was the second treatise that we just finished, starting from إِعْلَمْ رَحِمَكَ اللَّهِ أَنَّهُ يَجِبُ عَلَى كُلِّ مُسْلِمٍ until the end of the ayah that we read. That is all the second treatise. And مِنْ بَابِ الْفَائِدَةِ, as an extra benefit, the Mu'allif, when he wrote these treatises, they were separate articles and separate treatises. They weren't together. The first treatise was by itself, and the second treatise was by itself. And then now, the third treatise that we're about to start is the real book that we're starting. That's where Usul al-Thalath actually starts, to the end of the book. Then the A'immah, the Mashayikh that came after him, they saw that they were similar in topic, and they added them together, and that became a Jadat al-Masluka, became something that is treaded by a lot of the scholars, and it became one book. So this is the first treatise that we did yesterday. Today is the second treatise. And right now, we're starting the book, Thalathat al-Usul, and this is the third treatise. And we're just going to do the little introduction, and next week we'll go into the main topic. So the third treatise is similar to the beginning of Qawa'id al-Arba'. The Mu'allif, rahimahullah, he says, إِعْلَمْ أَرْشَدَكَ اللَّهُ لِلطَّاعَةِ. Know, may Allah guide you to His obedience. And here, this is the third time the Shaykh is making dua for the student. And this shows the kindness and the gentleness from the teacher to his students and wanting good for them. And then he says, أَنَّ الْحَنِيفِيَّةَ مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمِ, that Al-Hanifiyyah is the religion of Ibrahim. And we mentioned in Qawa'id al-Arba' that Al-Hanifiyyah is, what's Hanifiyyah? I don't know. Jazakallahu khair. To turn away from shirk and turn towards at-tawheed. Al-hanifiyyah comes from al-hanaf, and al-hanaf is to be crooked, to be bent. That's why someone with a crooked and a bent leg is called ahnaf, al-ahnaf. And in the quiz that we read, a lot of people read the religion, a lot of people got it right. Some people read the religion of Ibrahim, some people read to worship Allah Azza wa Jalla alone. That's correct, but it's not the meaning of the word al-hanifiyyah. Al-hanifiyyah means to turn away from shirk and to turn towards at-tawheed. And that might come in the quiz this week again. Then Sheikh, he says, like he said in Qawaid al-Arba', هُوَ مِلَّةِ إِبْرَاهِيمِ, it is the religion of Ibrahim, أَنْ تَعْبُدَ اللَّهَ مُخْلِصًا لَهُ الدِّينِ, that you worship him alone and make the religion sincere for him. Just like Allah Azza wa Jal, he said, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, and I did not create jinn and mankind except to worship me alone. يعبدون أي يوحدون, worship me, أي worship me alone, that they single him out in worship. يعبدون أي يوحدون. Then he says, وأعظم ما أمر الله به التوحيد. And in the مؤلف he says, the most important thing that Allah Azza wa Jal commanded with and ordered with is التوحيد. The tawheed of Allah Azza wa Jal, that you single him out in worship. And then he says, وَهُوَ إِفْرَادُ اللَّهِ بِالْعِبَادَةِ, which is to single out Allah Azza wa Jal in his worship, which is to single Allah Azza wa Jal out in his worship. And madam, it is the most important thing that Allah Azza wa Jal commanded with, then it is the first thing that a slave should give inaya to, he should give importance to, and he should strive in learning. And like we always say, Hafiz al-Hakimi, he said in his Manbuma, وَأَوَّلُ وَاجِبٍ عَلَى الْعَبِيدِ مَعْرِفَةُ الرَّحْمَانِ تَوْحِيدِ جَزَكَ الْخَيْرِ. And the first obligation that Allah Azza wa Jal commanded the slaves with is to know about Allah Azza wa Jal through Tawheed. And then he says, وَأَعْظَمُ مَا نَهَى عَنْهُ الشِّرْكِ, and the greatest thing that Allah Azza wa Jal forbade and prohibited from is الشرك. الشرك is to associate partners with Allah Azza wa Jal. And الشرك is the biggest crime due to four reasons. Write down. Shirk is the biggest crime due to four reasons. Number one, الشرك is قُبْحٌ مَحْد. It is pure evil. It is pure evil. قُبْحٌ مَحْد. And that is due to not, yani there is the shaytan, shaytan alayhi min Allah ma yastahiq, does not have anything to beautify it with, because it's pure evil compared to other sins. Some other sins, like taking money illegally, there's zina, there's some beautification. You have money quickly, you can spend it, you can kather, you can buy stuff with it. Likewise, zina, fornication, there's some zina, some desire, the soul desires. As for shirk, what's the soul gonna get out of shirk? It's pure evil. That's number one. There's no desire and there's nothing, there's no zina calling to it. Number two, that a person, qubhun mahd, pure evil. Qubhun mahd. And then secondly, a person who falls into shirk, all of these actions are considered null and void, zero. Secondly, a person who falls into shirk, all of these actions are considered null and void, meaning zero, worth nothing. وَقَدِمْنَا إِلَى مَا عَمِلُوا مِنْ عَمَلٍ فَجَعَلْنَاهُ هَبَاءً مَنْثُورًا. And then thirdly, a person who falls into shirk will abide in the hellfire forever, and he will never exit from it. A person who dies upon shirk will abide and stay in the hellfire for eternity and never come out of it. And fourthly, and lastly, you got it? And fourthly, that Allah Azza wa Jal will never forgive shirk. That Allah Azza wa Jal will never forgive shirk. Allah Azza wa Jal, he says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَغْفِرُ أَنْ يُشْرَكَ بِهِ. Indeed, Allah does not forgive that he's associated partners with. He does not forgive shirk. Allah Azza wa Jal, he does not forgive shirk. Allah Azza wa Jal, he does not forgive shirk. So these are four reasons why shirk is the biggest crime. Firstly, you want to go on? Number one. Okay, let's ask questions. Number one. Yeah. Pure evil. In Arabic, dwelling. Qubhun mahd. Number two. What's your name? Muhammad.
Number two.
That's part of number one.
Yes, if a person falls into shirk, all of his actions are considered null and void. Meaning they amount to nothing. They're worth nothing. Allah Azza wa Jalla will cancel all of your actions. You'll not get no reward for your actions because you fell into shirk. Major shirk. Thirdly, fourthly, that Allah Azza wa Jalla will never forgive shirk, the person that falls into shirk. Number three, and last, person will abide and stay in the hellfire forever. That's thirdly. Fourthly, Allah will never forgive shirk. And that is today's lesson. هذا والله أعلم وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم.